Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life. Now here's the host of Faith Matters, Tom McGovern.
I'm Tom McGovern, host of Faith Matters, and it's my delight this Sunday afternoon to have as our special guest my friend and colleague of many years, Dr. Ron Warner. Welcome to Faith Matters, Ron.
Thank you very much, Tom. I'm happy to be with you.
Ron, before we came on air, we were talking, and my goodness, what a colorful personal and professional life you have had. Going back to your roots in Southeast Ohio.
Well, I grew up there on a small family farm that I believe belonged to my great-great-grandfather. As you may know, the hills of southeastern Ohio, you can only plow about 40% of your acreage. So we had a lot of hillside pastures and woodlands, and we had a small herd of Jersey cows. We raised some Duroc pigs. We raised laying hens and turkeys. Back in those days, before the large feed companies got involved, we would have about 5,000 turkeys on the hillside. We'd try to get half of those ready for Thanksgiving and the other half ready for Christmas.
So from an early age, you were introduced to the intimate connection between humans and animals in a very loving, very practical and loving way.
The animals depended on us and we depended on the animals.
Tell us that wonderful story of the veterinarian and his treatment of the cows when they got milk fever, wasn't it?
Milk fever, yes, yes. Well, the Jersey dairy cow is very prone to a metabolic disease called milk fever, which occurs right at the time she gives birth, and she loses all of her circulating calcium from her bloodstream into her milk. As a consequence, she's unable to stand, and so she goes down.
And out comes the veterinarian. Tell us about the veterinarian and the cigar.
Yeah. Well, our veterinarian in those days was Dr. G.B. Taylor, and he graduated in 1908 from Guelph. It's now Guelph. Back then, it was the University of Toronto. He went into practice initially, and of course, back in those days, the major reason for veterinarians were draft horses because there were no trucks and automobiles. He went into a practice in Western Indiana and then was drafted in World War I and went to France and was in charge of a cavalry remount hospital in France. This now is the early 1950s, late 1940s, and he's our local veterinarian. And we called Dr. Taylor out when we had a case of milk fever, among other things. It was often in the wintertime, and he would come walking through the snow to the back door of the farmhouse, and he'd tell my mom, "Betty, I need a bucket of hot water and two clean towels." And so I would follow him out to the barn, and we would find the old Jersey cow in the maternity stall there. We'd have to roll her up on her sternum and get a halter on her and tie her head around to her back leg so her jugular vein would stand out like your thumb. He had a bottle of 500 mLs of calcium solution, and he would sit there with his cigar in the corner of his mouth. I never, ever saw the cigar lighted. It was always an unlit cigar in the corner of his mouth. I guess it was like his pacifier. So he would sit there. He would titrate, hold his thumb and his index finger against the rubber tubing that went from the bottle of calcium down to the needle in the jugular, and he would carefully titrate that in real slowly, because if you let the calcium run in too rapidly, it'll knock the heart. So we'd spend 20 minutes running that into her. And then he would disconnect his IV apparatus and we'd sit there for another 15 minutes. And slowly she would regain her muscular ability and she would roll up on her sternum. And then she'd belch a big belch because the rumen had been inactive all this time. Another 10 or 15 minutes and she'd begin to get on her feet.
And as a child, how were you impressed?
I said, "That is a miracle. I want to learn how to do miracles." He was my idol.
How do you see the intimate relationship between us humans and all of creation in the animal world?
People and animals have been closely related and dependent on one another from the beginning. Certainly, we see that in the earliest paintings in caves and other prehistoric artwork on rock surfaces. Much of that is animal imagery, either because they depended on those animals for food, or in the case of dogs, companionship. It's been a long, long relationship. They say even in nursing homes and long-term care facilities, one of the things that people will suggest they miss the most is their pet. And I think that's because animals show a lot of childlike behavior, a lot of innocence, a lot of trust, and they're non-judgmental. And so I think that's part of the basis of the bond. We call it the animal-human bond.
So inspired by the veterinarian from Canada and then your own innate love of animals, it led you after high school into college at Ohio.
Yes, I went to undergraduate school at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. Its claim to fame is it's the first university formed in the Northwest Territory or west of the Alleghenies. It was about 100 miles to the south, southwest of where I grew up. I majored in zoology and chemistry. After 3 years, I applied to Ohio State, was accepted into the class that began in the fall of 1967. I graduated in May of 1971.
You volunteered then for the National Guard, was it?
It was sort of a forced volunteerism. Some of our listeners may remember that during the late 60s, the war in Vietnam was getting only uglier and uglier. President Johnson was determined that we would win that war. Primarily, it was an increase in the number of American servicemen, and we had a military draft then, which is something very foreign to most young people today. I was close to being drafted out of veterinary school because my small home county back in Ohio didn't have a whole lot of 18 to 21-year-old young men, so I was feeling the pressure, and I just felt if I was drafted out of veterinary school, I'd never get back to finish. But the military had this other option, which was a program called the Early Commissioning Program. And if I signed up in the reserves, they would not draft me out of college. But once I graduated, I would owe them 3 years of my life. And so I felt that was my better option.
Dr. Ron Warner has his veterinary degree. And in the next segment, we will continue to follow with delight his career, his calling as a veterinarian. So let's take a brief break at this time.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Okay, welcome back to Faith Matters. It's our delight to have as our guest this Sunday afternoon, Dr. Ron Warner. Before we went on break, Ron was recalling his life, your graduation from the veterinarian school. That led to a first appointment as a veterinarian. Tell us about that.
Well, as I said, I was in the early commissioning program, which meant that I wouldn't be drafted out of veterinary school, but once I graduated, I would have to come on active duty for 3 years. The one thing that they could not provide me was when I would be called to active duty. So I graduate, still no orders for active duty. I needed a job to support my wife and baby girl. I was lucky in that there was a general practitioner in northeastern Ohio, Dr. Tom Liggett, and Tom wanted to take his wife to France to show her where he had been in World War II, but he needed somebody to cover his practice. Fortunately, my veterinary surgeon in veterinary school knew him, and they had been talking, and I was recommended as the man to take over his practice for a couple of months. It was fascinating. I was overwhelmed with the amount of work that there was to do. I had gone up for a few weekends before graduation and ridden with him and practiced with him, helped him in small animal clinic and surgery, and I got some sense of how busy he was. He and his wife didn't have any children, and she was his nurse, she was his receptionist, she was his accountant, She made him as efficient as four people. He had a telephone in every room. He did not want to miss a call.
So tell us about some of the excursions out into the barns when you took care of animals and in the cold.
I would have to go out on appointments in the morning. There would be herd work to do. There would be cattle to test for TB and brucellosis. There would be a group to castrate. There would be a group to deworm. All of that happened between breakfast and lunch. And then I would come back in and grab a sandwich. And then we had small animal hours for the first few hours of the afternoon. And then I'd grab another sandwich, and I would have to go back out on farm calls. These were usually emergency farm calls. And I'd get all of those taken care of and then back for evening clinic hours. And then I'd maybe be getting an hour of my 4 hours of sleep, and somebody would call at 5 in the morning and there was a difficult delivery, either a horse or a cow or a sheep or something. It was nonstop. Of course, my wife was taking care of our 2-month-old baby daughter, and she was trying to help me as much as she could in the clinic. Yeah, I did a lot of things there by myself that I never imagined I could do. I'll be honest, I made a few mistakes, but I learned from them. That was the routine for the first couple of months after school. I laid on many cold barn floors and had my hand up the cow, trying to turn a calf to get the jaw to come forward or to make the foot unfold and come forward. It would be dirty and chilly in the morning, and you wonder if your arm is going to go numb before you can get the calf out.
My goodness. So you continued in private practice then for a little longer.
Yes. After leaving Dr. Liggett, I still didn't have any orders for active duty, so I went back to my home county and practiced with another veterinarian, as well as Dr. Taylor. Dr. Taylor was getting up in years by then. He was in his 80s. He had had cataract surgery, and his vision wasn't real good in the early morning and the late afternoon when the sun was close to the horizon. So I drove for him and practiced with him. Actually, we were working the county fair in early September when my wife came running up to the stock show barn, and she had this big manila envelope, and she was waving it in the air. It was orders to active duty at Shepherd Air Base in Wichita Falls, Texas.
And that began your career as a veterinarian with the Air Force. And altogether, how many years were you in the Air Force?
22 and a half or thereabouts.
What was it like practicing as a veterinarian in the Air Force?
Well, we had basically four components to our mission in the veterinary corps. First and most important, I guess, is taking care of military animals. That began way back in the Spanish-American War with the cavalry. On the Air Force base, we had military working dogs, and then we would have to take care of the pets of the folks that lived on base. And so we had probably 3 clinics a week for a half a day each. Oftentimes, the wing commander would allow active duty people to keep their horses stabled on base. He would have 4 or 5 acres down at the end of the runway, and he would say, "It's fine with me if you want to have a horse stable down there, but you're going to have to keep the problems under control." So the veterinary office would take care of the vaccinations and the dewormings. We kept the fly and mosquito problems down.
Into the Air Force flew one evening a magnificent owl. Tell us the owl story.
So this happened at Mather Air Force Base in Sacramento, California. As you probably know, the Air Force has some very large hangars for some very large aircraft, and sometimes the hangar was built before the aircraft, and the aircraft is too long to get entirely into the hangar. So one night they had a large aircraft in the hangar, but they couldn't close the doors, and they left the doors open, of course. A large great horned owl flew up in and decided to spend the night between a couple of panels of the sliding door. Next morning, they get ready to open the doors and back the aircraft out, and somebody spies the owl up there, and they say, "Oh, we can't crush that owl in those sliding door panels."
So send for the veterinarian.
Yes. So we coordinated with the fire department. The fire department brought their big ladder truck out. Fortunately, I had this big heavy glove that I used when I'm dealing with the military working dogs. And I put that glove on and I go up the ladder and I retrieve this owl from between these two panels of sliding door. I've never had a creature put so much pressure on my hand as that owl did when he was clutching that glove. We brought him down the ladder.
How lovely. Ron, this is such a fascinating story with so much wonderful interaction between God's creation and the animals you are so blessed to be caring for. So at this point, we will take a short break. And in our final segment, we will follow changes in your professional life and then the restoration of your first love for animals in your present undertakings.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. If you're just joining us this Sunday afternoon, our special guest is Dr. Ron Warner. Ron, your career in the Air Force changed because there was no longer a place for so many veterinarians, and this led you to pursue a degree in epidemiology. Tell us about that.
About 1980, 1981, Congress eliminated the Veterinary Corps from the Air Force and allowed the Army Veterinary Corps to take care of veterinary issues in all of the active duty services, at which time I was sort of disenfranchised, I guess, and not sure what I was going to do. But fortunately for me, I guess, the Air Force was looking for some folks to pursue advanced degrees. I applied for that program and was selected to do a PhD in epidemiology at Ohio State also.
And that led then to you being the public health officer in South Korea.
As I finished my academic time in my PhD program, I was sent to Osan Air Base in South Korea, which is one of the largest air bases that we have in South Korea. I was the public health officer there. I did a little bit of veterinary work there because the Army had not yet assigned an Army veterinarian. But the bulk of my work for the rest of my Air Force career was strictly human public health work. In Korea, the large portion of that was to investigate disease outbreak occurrences among active duty troops, such as influenza, STDs, pink eye, foodborne illnesses, tuberculosis, and at that particular time, HIV/AIDS was really making its initial impact on the military. And
also, Ron, at this time, you saw the intertwining between public health and politics, which goodness knows we've seen so much of, as the Olympics were coming up and you had to, in some way, articulate the public health tensions between North Korea and South Korea particularly.
Right. And South Korea was, as you say, preparing to host the 1988 Summer Olympics, and they were increasing their security stance. I don't know which element of the U.S. government, but the U.S. was sending a lot of military dogs to South Korea to bolster their security forces. So I would have to get up whenever a plane came in with 20 or 30 dogs on it. I would have to go down to the flight line and meet that plane. We would do summary translations of the dog's medical record to the South Koreans, and I would have to inspect the dogs and make sure that they were still fine after their flight.
And then after 23 plus years in the Air Force, you joined Texas Tech as an epidemiologist with your career now in public health. You also, as part of your time at Tech, when people were going overseas, you were the expert in infectious diseases in the various countries, not just for Tech, but for the community at large.
In 1996, we began a travel medicine clinic here at Texas Tech. Because of my experience in the Air Force, we did that for the next 20 years until I retired. I used to keep track. I've seen people traveling to something like 220 different countries or regions of the world.
Make determinations of what vaccinations we need.
Yes, whether they needed anti-malarial treatment or whatever.
And then, lo and behold, a new veterinarian school is established in Amarillo. Tell us about the new school.
Well, I'm very honored and privileged to be able to be part of that, thanks to Dr. Ted Mitchell. Our philosophy is that this school is going to be very One Health oriented. One Health is the idea of man and animal sharing so much in common biologically. We've learned so much from human medicine that applies to veterinary medicine and vice versa. There have been many diseases that were equally disastrous for animal populations as for human populations. And of course, the early Egyptians and Greeks and Romans learned this. They were very astute observers. They recorded some of the earliest descriptions of rabies and brucellosis and plague and all of these many diseases that affect both man and animal.
Designing and helping to design the new school, Ron, you were describing before we came on air.
The new building will be oriented north-south. The south entrance will face the School of Medicine there in Amarillo. The two wings of the building will be connected by a hallway. There are floor-to-ceiling windows in that hallway facing south. And between the windows will be these, I believe there are 14 panels. I think there will be some of the panels dedicated to the history of veterinary medicine in the United States. There will be some of the panels dedicated to the history of veterinary medicine in Texas. And there'll be some dedicated to the history of the School of Medicine, as well as Texas Tech University. I've submitted one particular piece of art that I think is really neat, and that is a painting of Plains Indians hunting bison before the introduction of the European horse, and they're crawling on the ground covered in wolf skins. That's how they got close enough to the bison to shoot an arrow into them. So obviously, the early Plains Indians studied the behavior of wolves, knowing that if only a couple of them would get up close to the bison, they wouldn't cause the bison to panic.
Ron, we have covered such a vast panorama this Sunday afternoon, from early days in Ohio back to Canada and the early veterinarians, and then to your wonderful service to your country with the Air Force, and then your wonderful, equally dedicated service at the med school. Ron, as you look back in the context of the one medicine of humans and animals of all sorts, place on this God's creation that we share, what would you say to our listeners by way of conclusion? What type of reverence, perhaps, should we have in this intimate interaction?
Well, I can only say that I've been taught and trained from my earliest days in professional school that the one real justification for veterinary medicine is the betterment of the human condition. Whether it's taking care of an isolated elderly person's pet, which is their only companion possibly, or whether it's being able to help a livestock producer make a profit so that we can have protein foods at a reasonable price. It's all one medicine. All facets of veterinary medicine really ultimately serve human well-being. You can't not think of animal welfare. You know, an animal that's not comfortable, an animal that's not pain-free, is not going to be a productive animal, either as a companion or as a source of food.
Ron, my thanks to you this Sunday afternoon for this wonderful journey through so much of this shared creation. And I hope that our listeners have shared in the passion that you bring to who you are and what you do. And again, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Tom. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Media.